Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Hi, this is Howes, New York, with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. It's our pre-Thanksgiving real estate recap for the month of November as we examine some of the biggest stories in real estate in Brooklyn for November. Stay tuned for Bob.
Over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn. Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome, everyone, to Howes New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. Tonight we're doing our monthly show on Brooklyn real estate and what went on during the month of November 2014 in Brooklyn. And as usual, Jason, my able producer, has scoured the internet for articles and stories about Brooklyn and things going on in all things real estate in Brooklyn. Of course, with all the things going on, he didn't have to scour too hard. In fact, if anything, he has to cull through a multitude of topics. But he was able to get a few. And Jason, what do you think we're going to start our show with tonight?
Well, you hit the nail on the head that we do have a embarrassment of riches when we're talking about stories about Brooklyn. And as we are getting set to celebrate Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving Eve, Brooklyn has a lot to be thankful for, and anybody involved in Brooklyn real estate, especially brokers, because apparently what we've been saying all along has really been brought to bear, and is just increasingly being validated. And this particular story, this first story that we're going to kick off with, came to us via one of our recent guests, Douglas Wagner from Bond, New York, who mentioned this on his appearance 2 weeks ago. Cranes, New York, put out a very interesting story, basically saying that every other city that wants to be hip and trendy is really modeling itself after Brooklyn, and that everybody wants to be the Brooklyn of their region, and that even Paris wants to be Brooklyn now, and that Brooklyn is the new Paris, France, the new place to be if you're anyone who's anyone in any of the arts, or if you're a hipster, or if you're, I guess, you might have been called a beatnik years ago, but now this is where the world seems to be converging is in Brooklyn, New York.
I'm sure many Parisians are spinning, reading the story and saying, ooh la la, how can they compare?
They're not artisanal enough.
Our Eiffel Tower to the Dime Savings Bank Tower in downtown Brooklyn. How can this be? But there is certainly a cachet to Brooklyn. There's no getting around it, I think. I would love to say Brooklyn is as beautiful as Paris, and probably it is. But I think the article is focusing more on what you mentioned, Jason, the beatnik aspect of it. It's hip, it's cool, it's happening, it's trendy. I don't know if we can match the Eiffel Tower. We do have to give Parisians their due. They have some nice rivers running through the city and two cafes lining it. I don't know if we have that yet. Maybe the Gowanus Canal will one day rival the Seine, or maybe the Insane, for a Paris. But I think really they're focusing on, there's just something about Brooklyn and the people it attracts. And, you know, our show with a couple of brokers we've had on the last 2 weeks all saying that, you know, Brooklyn properties are rivaling Manhattan properties, and many times clients are looking for Brooklyn first, Manhattan as a place to settle for.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you can almost see the correlation between this gritty as chic ascension that's gone on in Brooklyn, and how that entrepreneurial to the nth degree aspect about so many pockets of Brooklyn, like in Williamsburg and Carroll Gardens, areas like that, where all these these businesses and these products that carry that made in Brooklyn, Brooklyn made label. It just seems like people from other cities across the country and around the world are coming here to see that and saying, "This is, we want to just take this model, lift it up and transplant it into wherever we are, Asheville, North Carolina, or Bucharest, Prague, all these places that used to be on the cusp of cool now are you know, playing catch up to Brooklyn and saying, this is what we want to be like, so that we can see the boom that's gone on in Brooklyn. And not only because, you know, maybe culturally or from the culinary side, which this also does seem to reference quite a bit, that's a big aspect of it. But they see the way that the prices reflected that, and then, you know, maybe there's some method to the madness there, where they're saying, hey, look, if we build it, they will come, type of aspect to it, where we're going to take that model, and then all of a sudden we will be booming too. Maybe not enough to dethrone Brooklyn, but if we adopt their model, we'll see a definite influx of the same types of hipsters who may not be able to afford Brooklyn.
It is a crazy story, and you know, they say a lot about Brooklyn, but I never envisioned them saying Paris and Brooklyn were comparable. But great for Brooklyn, we'll take it. However.
And another thing about it too is that they're using that around the world as their selling point. As if you want to be considered a hot area, region, whatever, you've got to put, we are the Brooklyn of this area, and that's going to be enough to, hey, where do I sign? I want to invest here. I want to buy here, because you just said you're the Brooklyn of the Ukraine, or wherever you want to hang your hat. It just seems like that you cannot go wrong if you incorporate the Brooklyn brand, and even the Brooklyn has just taken on a cottage industry of its own across the world with the Brooklynization of regions. And my favorite about the article is that when they're trying to find the new Brooklyn, what's the next Brooklyn on the horizon? And there, at the end of the article, they reference Queens, and they say, "Well, Queens is the new Brooklyn," and they've already come up with the compound phrase for that, and it's Quooklyn.
Not too much comment on Queens becoming the new
Quooklyn. I don't buy it either, but I love how we, our never-ending need to nickname things. We've invented a new name for Queens.
Yeah. Should we be concerned with the dilution of the brand? Should we somehow protect the trademark? You know, they do that in France, actually, with their wines. They don't really want wines outside of their certain areas to be called, you know, those areas. And actually, Champagne, the best-known brand, is named after a region. So, and the people in the Champagne part of France, you know, go to great lengths to, you know, protect that name, they call it Appellation Contrôlée, you know, protective name, the control. So maybe we should start, Brooklynites, start defending your name.
You have to think, though, that if that ever came up, Marty Markowitz probably would have investigated that and tried to protect Brooklyn from being having had any type of copyright or trademark infringement to it, and probably with good reason, because of our next story, which comes to us from CNBC, and they're now talking about the rising prices of Brooklyn real estate. And it almost seems like it's en vogue for these news and media outlets to also latch on to the Brooklyn story, because it's hard to ignore it. It's not really containable now anymore. It's not just a local regional thing where people in the Brooklyn Spectator are talking about this. Now CNBC is now recognizing that the prices in Brooklyn have risen so high that now we're no longer runner-up to Manhattan. We're people's number one choice in the area for where they want to, you know, buy a home and move to.
That's certainly true. That sometimes Brooklyn is first and Manhattan is the area they settle for. And I don't know if it was ever the reverse. I think Manhattan was always the place people wanted to be, and they didn't even consider places like Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, the Bronx. But, you know, with the Renaissance and the coolness of certain areas, you know, people are now looking, and the more they look, the more they buy, and the higher the prices go, and developers come in and offer crazy apartment style living for thousands of dollars or millions of dollars, and amenities galore. Sure, there's plenty of, or there was plenty of room to build and put in all types of exotic amenities and fixtures, and the price goes up, and people like brand new, cutting edge, and also a cool environment. And Williamsburg, Greenpoint, Bushwick are all, you know, those type of properties.
Well, and this is also something that's been, I think, reaffirmed from some of our experts that we've had on as guests in the past several shows, is that the prices have gone to such lengths in Brooklyn that it's almost now like people are having to relocate to Manhattan just to be able to afford someplace because they can't afford Brooklyn. And we got a quote in this piece from somebody from Halstead who called Brooklyn the center of the universe. Now, I mean, with all this lofty praise, you would think that, you know, Brooklyn has morphed into this this champagne society, but I think that it also points out that one of the things that Brooklyn hasn't lost and it's still retained and probably is one of its biggest draws is the neighborhood feel to it, that you still get that, and especially, you know, areas like, you know, our own backyard in Bay Ridge and downtown Brooklyn and Park Slope, and you know, there's so many parts of Brooklyn that still have that old neighborhood attraction.
You know, you're right. You look through Manhattan, and really you got the east side, the west side. Even the Village, Chinatown, you know, all areas, but not real communities like you see in the Sheepshead Bay, a Bay Ridge, a Sunset Park. I mean, these are neighborhoods with true identities. They have commercial strips surrounded by residential, and the commercial strips act as the center of activity for the community. And yet you walk a few blocks and you're in primarily residential. And the type of commercial strips you see in Brooklyn are more like the small bank, the small bakery, small grocery store or supermarket. Whereas in Manhattan, everything is chain, franchise, and very little opportunity for, you know, the single entrepreneur to open a business, whereas those opportunities do exist in Brooklyn, the community, the very many and varied communities of Brooklyn.
And one of those communities and areas that, or neighborhoods, if you will, that is getting some spotlight as being up and coming and in demand is featured in a piece from the New York Times real estate section. And I never heard of this area, but just from the title, it sounds like a place I'd love to live. Vinegar Hill. I don't know much about Vinegar Hill. I don't know if you have any dealings or any history with this area, but just from the title, it refers to it as Brooklyn's sleepy enclave, and it just sounds like a very inviting place. And it's just another area that seems to be on the come.
Well, you know, the thing with Vinegar Hill, and yes, I did travel down there once or twice. Me too, intrigued by the name, thinking there would, of course, be the Vinegar Factory there or some famous battle fought on the hill. I don't know if I saw a hill there either. But it's a little bit like all of a sudden you turn a corner and you're back 150 years into, you know, what the city looked like probably in the 1800s. And it is a difficult neighborhood to get into because it's ringed on one side by the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and on the water side there's Con Edison facilities. And there's really no direct, you know, just like Dumbo, it also has the BQE, running as a boundary. And there's really no easy way to get in there. You have to really plot. It's almost like sailing. You have to tack a few times before you get to where you want to be in Vinegar Hill. But nonetheless, you do arrive in this community, and suddenly you're back, 100, 150 years into what New York City looked like. Cobblestone streets, storefronts, the old wooden style storefronts are there. And strangely, everybody's asking about the name Vinegar Hill. Of course, there's no Vinegar Factory. There was no battle on a hillside. But apparently it was named after an English battle. I don't even know if it's an Anglo-Irish battle in 1798. So I don't know how that, how that name got translated over the Atlantic into this tiny community on the East River, but somehow it did. What's your take on Vinegar Hill?
Well, I mean, if you could say in colonial times we got all in a huff about tax on tea. In Brooklyn, we fight over vinegar. And that's why I think that battle must have taken place over. It's about food, because we love our food in Brooklyn, and we're very passionate about it. But there is the Vinegar Hill House, which is a famous restaurant that opened in 2008 in the region. But when they talk about the charm of the area, and they talk about the old world Brooklyn and the pre-Civil War brick and frame houses. One would come to mind, well, pre-Civil War, okay, it's probably, you're talking about, 1860s, 18. I mean, there's places here that, go back to, 1806, the early 1800s. And then even that's not that old for Brooklyn because, people really forget that we've been around as a rather large destination since the 17th century, in the 1600s, as a Dutch settlement. So there's a ton of history, and then when you find a neighborhood like this that still has that old architecture and that history that's still at the surface, that it hasn't been completely lost to time. I think that's also another really big draw to say, hey, I'm living in what used to be a federal building or something like that. There's this connection to history that not that many places can lay claim to.
I'm just wondering why someone hasn't actually started a vinegar distillery down in that area. It's almost a, foregone conclusion that they would be successful, but they haven't. And why they haven't been assumed into Dumbo, I don't know if you hear about Vinegar Hill more than like once a year. Dumbo you do hear quite a bit about, you know,
that
beautiful waterfront. But Vinegar Hill is pretty much cut off from the water by the Con Ed facility. They call it a dystopian sprawl of a colossal Con Ed substation. I don't know what dystopian means, but it doesn't sound good. It sounds like something futuristic and ugly.
It doesn't sound as good as Sleepy Enclave.
No, it's not a Sleepy Enclave. Dystopian sprawl. We'll have an answer for you next week on what dystopian sprawl means.
Well, let's combine. I got to combine our two final stories because I think they kind of go together. I had, you know, my questions about it. And this also comes from the New York Times. And one deals with, you know, when you're looking for an apartment in Brooklyn, and this is more of a you know, on the rental side, you know, what are people looking for in terms of, you know, what type of home they want to have? And then what's also coming in developments in Brooklyn, which we've spoken about several times as well, is the race to be the tallest building in Brooklyn. And one of the new buildings that's on the horizon is the Borum, down in Borum Hill. One story says that people are looking for post-war because they like the old Brooklyn charm, but they don't want the old Brooklyn amenities. They want that charm, but also dressed up with 2015 and beyond amenities. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the condo being built is done so on the title as a new Brooklyn condo with a pre-war aesthetic. So in Brooklyn too, it's because we want to have our cake and eat it too. What's your take on this, the post-war, pre-war war?
Well, I'm not, you know, a student of architecture, and I really could never understand what pre-war and post-war buildings did. Was there some sort of radical change in the architectural style once, you know, the Germans surrendered? Did we suddenly go?
As if there was just one war.
Right, and what war did that be?
What war defined architecture for all time?
Yes, no, I think nary an architectural student would say that there's any specific period attributed to a war. But in any event, yes, we take these to be, you know, the 1930s, 1940s type of building, big, heavy, older, imposing, maybe some gargoyles, you know, hanging off the building to ward off, you know, evil spirits. Big marble lobbies, heavy doors. Then once you get into the apartment, you have old fixtures, old electric, old plumbing, tiny bathrooms, tiny closets. Sure, you may have plaster walls and ceilings, and probably some you know, decoration on the plaster. But I think what you point out, Jason, is people do want modern. They want to be able to plug their laptop into a port on the wall. They want all sorts of automatic features that turn up and off the heat and up and off the electricity. And maybe doorman buildings and places where Fresh Direct can be delivered and held until you get home from your Manhattan job or your Brooklyn job. And they really don't want to give that up. I mean, we are slaves to you know, these power cords for our iPhones and tablets and laptops. And we want all these modern amenities that are available. And yes, developers know that, and they're putting in these luxury high-rises. And there's no limit to the amount of amenities they offer. I know some in downtown Brooklyn, you see the advertisements on the sides of their buildings, a place to play pool, although I don't know if that's such a great attraction. It looks good as an attraction, but I don't know if after dinner I would go down with my pool cue and play a few rounds. They will have theaters in them. Once again, great looking amenity. But really, when are you going to go down there and, you know, are you watching, you know, kids movie, you know, for your younger children, or do you want to watch some more scientific, sci-fi, and who's going to be the arbiter of what's playing in the movie space that evening? But in any event, those are amenities that builders are throwing in, and that impress people. Whether they use them or not is a different question. And my final comment on this area, I used to park my car in just about every... This was a row of parking lots from Borum Place almost up to 3rd Avenue, and they were just big old parking lots. And one by one, it started to fall, and, you know, these tall towers went in, and this Borum Place tower is really... It's really hard to believe that they were of no use 30 years ago other than to park trucks and buses and cars that happened to be going down to the courthouse or when A&S was there. But now they've all been gobbled up and luxury high-rises.
Luxury high-rises with a pre-war aesthetic, so we can keep the look but make sure we have our high-tech amenities. So the takeaway here is that we want our gargoyles, but we want our gargoyles to be Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yes, maybe. Yes, putting tool antennas out of the gargoyle to shoot your signal that much further.
Mm-hmm. And with that, I think our Thanksgiving episode recap is about up.
And we have a lot to be thankful for living in Brooklyn, the coolest, hippest, hottest area on the planet, according to Crane. So this is our sign-off. We're concluding our monthly radio show, talking about Brooklyn real estate. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and thanks to our producer, Jason, for scouring the Internet to find all of these very interesting articles. And this is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.